Welcome to this podcast in a series developed by the Nebraska Juvenile Justice Association. NJJA is a 501c3 not-for-profit public benefit association. The mission of NJJA is to improve services to youth in the juvenile justice system by serving as a resource for collaboration, leadership development, and education for juvenile justice system professionals and interested stakeholders. Our efforts are greatly enhanced with the generous support of the Sherwood Foundation. Please visit our website at njja.org to see a list of upcoming podcasts, as well as the opportunity to revisit those podcasts previously recorded. We welcome your thoughts as to potential podcast topics and interest. Welcome to the Juvenile Justice in Nebraska podcast, produced by the Nebraska Juvenile Justice Association.
All right, guys. So we are here with Nick and Victoria from Radius. Radius is a nonprofit. I'm just going to read a little bit off the site here. A nonprofit organization serving girls and boys ages 12 to 18 with a focus on restoring relationships between youth, families, and their community. So, yeah, awesome to have you guys here today. To get started, just tell us a little something about something a little fun, you know, Nick and Victoria, about yourselves. Something we may not know.
Well, something about myself. So, my wife and I have two kids. We have two teenage kids and we have two dogs. One is an 80-pound golden doodle and one is a 13-pound little white dog mix. And Sam, the golden doodle, is trained as a therapy dog. So he comes to work with me usually one day a week. And the staff and the youth who live here really enjoy seeing him and having him in the building, because when the dog's around, everybody's mood improves. So we try to do that on a Monday, because usually Mondays, you know,
they're rough.
Youth are coming out of the weekend, they're going back to school, staff are coming in. And so that's kind of a fun fact, both for our family and for Radius. He's a cool addition to our program.
Oh, wow. I love therapy dogs. In my last job, we used to do like a youth event, and we would always bring in the dogs. They'd bring in about 20 dogs for that event. And that was like the big hit, man. It was about that wasn't the main emphasis, but that was what all the kids wanted to see. So yeah. Awesome.
Victoria, it's cool.
Something interesting about yourself or something you would like to share, Victoria.
Sure. So I am not from Omaha. I consider myself a native of the Midwest, and just a little fun fact, I'm from Kansas City, born and raised, and I was very excited that we won the Super Bowl. There's my fun fact.
Tammy, how did we remove Victoria from the meeting?
I'm sorry.
that was a little sad for the Niners, but we're all right.
It was a good game.
Yeah, it was a good game. I really enjoyed it. So, I guess. Tammy, do you want to share a little something today about yourself that we might not know?
How about this? I grew up on a farm. My dad, we raised hogs and farmed beans and corn. And so, yeah, so I'm a small, small town rural farm girl.
Nice.
I always swore I'd never marry a farmer, and I didn't. But now that I am the age I am, I think I could have handled more married a farmer, because I absolutely love the farm. I love goat setting.
Awesome. Yeah, I was going to say I used to raise goats, and I used to have a llama. His name was Steve. So I always tell people that, and they really do not believe me. I do it for my two truths and a lie. They're like, you didn't, you know, I'm like, yeah, I grew up in Los Angeles, and then we moved to here, and my dad was like, I want to raise goats. So, yeah. All right. So my first question I wanted to ask you guys is, how did you get involved with juvenile justice and human services?
Well, many years ago, 29th year, I was graduating college, with a psychology degree, and really had no idea what I wanted to do. A lot of my friends were either heading into counseling or therapy or psychology graduate school. At the time, I knew I didn't want to do that, but I wasn't sure. But one thing I'd been thinking about was working with young people. And so I had some friends that worked at places like Boys Town, Omaha Home for Boys, and Allegiant Health at the time, which is now CHI, and these different kinds of programs. And we would all kind of hang out. And I'd always say, yeah, I think I might want to try get a job working with young people. And, you know, after four or five of those conversations, most of them are like, dude, go do it. Like, go quit talking about it. Go get a job and you'll find out. Like, try it out. You'll find out if you like it. And so shortly after college, I did that. I got my first job actually at the Boys Town RTC, which was downtown, and it was jointly managed by Allegiant Health. So I was actually an Allegiant employee, but it was a Boys Town program. And that was my start. And I liked it immediately. We were working with youth with pretty serious needs. It was very challenging. I realized right away that very little of my psychology degree prepared me for what I was doing. But I got great training and support, and I just kind of kept going. I didn't anticipate that was the start of a career, but it was, and here I am.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I had a, not exactly the same, but I had a similar where I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do. And I started to volunteer at YRTC in Kearney and with the art program and stuff. And I was like, you know what? I really like this, even though it was some really tough kids that I was working with, but it was just really cool to see them grow. And there's a few that I still stay in touch with, you know, on Facebook and see how they're doing. But that's awesome, man.
That's cool.
Yeah. Victoria, how did you get involved with human services? And
I've worked in the nonprofit sector for 7 years, and I'm new to the juvenile justice and behavioral health field. However, I've always had a passion for working with youth, and I've always worked with youth in some capacity. Additionally, I know that we can probably dig into this later, but lived experience is so valuable. And I do come from a family with some lived experience in the justice system. So the opportunity to be here at Radius was a no-brainer.
Yeah, that's so important. When you have that experience, it's almost like you're able to help even more. You're able to understand more what these kids and these like people are going through. So yeah.
Right.
So awesome. I have to add this piece too. It's interesting that Nick and Josh, you both had those experiences, because the minute I got out of college with my bachelor's degree in psychology, I also worked at the Cedars Youth Residential Treatment Center. So that was my first experience as well. So it's kind of crazy.
There you go.
The commonality there.
So my next question, I think goes more a little towards Nick. How did you get involved with NJJA?
Well, I think like many people, my first exposure was the conference. And this is going back 20 years when the conference was in Grand Island at the Holodome. This is way back before the conference outgrew that space. And we literally, it got too big for the location. And I was in a role at Boys Town at the time in the admissions office. And so I heard about this conference and I wanted to attend. And we were also a vendor. It was a great opportunity to connect and network with people. And so I jumped in my car. I went to Grand Island 1 year, and I've been going every year since. And along the way, as I got to know people that were involved with NJJ, Corey Steele at the time, who was working probation in Lincoln, and then many, many others. And then Tom McBride, you know, along the way, I would say, this is an amazing conference. I love what you do. I got great respect. If there's anything that I could ever do to support, let me know. And one of those conversations with Tom was, well, we're looking for board members. Would you be open to that? And so I joined the board a few years ago, had sort of a short board assignment. And then at the time I was working on my PhD and things were really busy and I needed to kind of prioritize. So I stepped off the board and then I come back on for a second appointment, which I'm currently serving in. So it was the conference, and it's just such a great way to expose people to what we do at NJJA. It's just so powerful, and it's gotten bigger and better ever since.
Oh yeah, man. That's kind of how I got involved. I started going to the conference about 10, 10 years ago, something like that. And I haven't looked back. It's been awesome, man. And Victoria, this is actually, we're here to recruit you to come to the conference. Now, Victoria, have you been able to attend the conference? I know you started last year.
I have not yet. However, Nick has said nothing but incredible things. So I think I will get the opportunity here soon.
Nice. We'd love to have you this year. All right. So I want to know a little bit more about Radius and all the awesome stuff you guys are doing over there. So do you guys just share a little bit about the work you guys are currently doing, over there, and maybe how it was created? Just a little bit more about Radius.
Absolutely. Well, the first thing to know about Radius is we opened in July. And so we are a brand new organization and a brand new program. And where we came from really started with a vision of our philanthropic community here in Omaha back in 2019, who a number of foundations, individuals were engaged in building capacity for mental health, building capacity for our youth in both the child welfare and juvenile justice system. And there's been a lot of change and reform and policy changes and improvements both in Omaha and across the state. And so in that context, a group of philanthropic leaders were looking at gaps in services. Where are young people not being able to be helped? And so I had the privilege to come on the project and alongside philanthropists and law enforcement and healthcare and probation, judges, have an advisory group for about 2 years to look at who was not getting served. We have all these great programs. We have this tremendous continuum, particularly in Omaha. Where was the gap? And one of the things we identified was in Douglas County, young people on juvenile probation who needed placement. There was a small group that was continually sent far away, Ohio, Utah, Indiana, Arizona, and they were not served in Omaha because either the existing programs were at capacity or the young people's complexity of needs were such that they weren't a fit for those programs. And so we're talking about youth who have had pretty serious law violations. Many have been detained. Of course, there's struggles with school and education, and their families have significant challenges, multi-generational challenges. And with the young people, what we learned was a high prevalence of mental health and or substance use treatment needs. And so that complexity led 20 to 25 young people every day in Omaha to have to go far away to get help. And they were far away from their families. And so what Radius has become is a specific solution to keep young people on probation here in Douglas County. And our mission is to empower youth and families to reach their full potential. And we do that through community engagement. And we do that through trauma-informed residential services, in-home services, social and behavioral health. And we have a unique partnership with Charles Drew Health Center here in Omaha. So when you visit our campus, you'll see two buildings. You'll see the Radius building where we have up to 24 boys and girls age 12 to 18 live with us for a period of time while we work with their families. We have a school right there. And next door in a separate building is a Charles Drew Health Center community location. So anyone from the community can come there. More importantly, our youth walk right next door to see their therapist for individual group family therapy, all their healthcare services. Some of our youth need psychiatric medication management, the whole array of services. And what we really like about that partnership is when you leave Radius and go home, you can come back to that location and get all of your healthcare and all of your, if you have mental health, therapy, substance use treatment needs, continue to get that in a public location really reduces the stigma of accessing mental health care because it's not a mental health facility. It's a community health location. And so, and Charles Drew has great trust in this community. And so with those four services, the residential, the in-home, the school, and Charles Drew, young people spend 6 to 12 months here They're all on probation. And our goal is to work with them and their families so they can return home to the Omaha community. And they may graduate from our high school, like a young man recently did. We've had our first young man transition back to the community. He's got his high school diploma. He's connected to college classes. We're doing job training with him. Maybe the most important part of what we do is we work very intensively with the families from day one. And it starts at admission and throughout that piece. And that's unique for a residential program because typically there's a little bit of a wait time where you do the family work toward the middle or end of the stay. We're doing that work right from the beginning. And so today we have 13 young people living here, and we're continuing to have admits. Probably by late spring, early summer, we'll be at capacity.
Oh, wow. That's awesome, man. You guys are doing a lot over there.
Nick, what is your capacity?
Our capacity is 24. So when you visit, you'll see three individual living suites where eight youth live. They all have single bedrooms and they have a living area. It very much has a kind of a college dorm feel to it, which is our goal to have a facility that is warm and inviting. Not institutional feeling, which is a challenge. And, you know, we arrived there from listening to young people. So along the way of that advisory group, we had a young person, he's an adult now, and a family member who had experience in both the juvenile justice child welfare system, and both had experience. The parent had his sons in facilities like ours, and the young man was in a facility like ours far away. And so when we talk about the physical environment here and that trauma-informed design with lots of natural light and open spaces and individual rooms, that came from talking to young people and families about how the environment impacts how people get better and what a difference that makes. And so it's very intentional. And when youth arrive here and their families arrive here, it is pretty typical that when they walk in the building and take a tour, they sort of look around. They're expecting something different. They're expecting more of an institutional look and feel. And I think with the support of our team and our designers and certainly all the philanthropic support, which carried through to a capital campaign to fund all of the buildings here, I think we've hit the mark on that. I think the feel of this is something very different, which then opens them to learning new skills and education and working with the family. It comes back to that trust. If you feel safe and you're in a place that looks different and is more welcoming, then we can build that trust and hopefully work together, make some progress on some pretty challenging stuff they're dealing with.
Now, Nick, the creation of Radius, was that always something that you dreamed about? I know you said there was a group of people that kind of brought up this need. You know, was it something that you always wanted to do? Just kind of, if you want to share a little bit about that when you came on.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I had been at Boys Town 23 years when this opportunity came up. And to be honest, I didn't have any plans of leaving Boys Town. I was in a public policy advocacy role, and I had done lots of different things over the years. One of the things that prepared me for this role was in doing policy work on behalf of Boys Town, both in Nebraska and regionally and nationally. I had gained a good understanding of where there were gaps in services, and we had gained a good understanding of some of the experiences that young people and families have when they're needed to be in an out-of-home placement. And so alongside many of the people who ended up on the advisory board, philanthropists and law enforcement and probation, we were all part of a lot of policy conversations in Douglas County about what was working and what programs from community-based programs to residential, what's working in the continuum and where is the gap. And so that really kind of primed the pump for that advisory committee. And having been part of those conversations, I was able to bring some knowledge there, but really relying on that advisory committee to shape the vision of what became our organization, because there was no radius. So we had to look at what the need was, look at national models in terms of programming. We did a visit to some programs to learn about best practices. But that advisory committee really shaped what has become Radius, with creating the nonprofit, the location, which is very intentional. We want to be in and near the community where our young people are from and where their families can access us. So it really, it was a collective experience. And when you look at our advisory board, I mean, you have hundreds of years of experience and different perspectives, which really is how you need to do new programming, and you need to include young people and families in their experience. That was probably the game changer.
Yeah, I love that. Cause you know, in so many of our like programs, you know, that we try to do for youth, we plan them without them. So I love that you guys brought youth in and families to kind of help like educate and yeah. An added question there would be, do you feel like you've had to adapt some things since you guys have started? Have you seen some ways that you guys have had to change up? Because I know you start with a main goal and a main mission, and then you actually get youth there. Have you had to adjust and change some things around?
We absolutely have. And you're right. When you start with a model and you start with a goal and a vision, and then you're working with families and youth, you make changes and you adapt change. We've made adaptations in our school. So we have a Rule 18 school on site with three classrooms. So our youth attend school and earn credits right here. They have significant educational needs and challenges. And many of them have not been going to school. And so there's adapting the educational piece. The work with families is a very fluid relational service that our in-home staff have to meet those families where they are and build trust. And at first, you know, we're seen as an extension of the system, and many families have not had positive experiences with the system. And so when they meet our staff, you're starting over like any relationship. So you have to build that trust. We've had to adapt and grow that program. We're doing a lot of work with community partners who have complementary services that our families need. Our families have housing challenges. They have food insecurity. They have financial stressors. That is not our expertise. But what we've done is vetted community partners who are trusted and have those expertise, so we connect families to those types of services. And then obviously with the residential program itself, when you have young people living here in an environment, they would rather be home, of course. So there's an adjustment there. There's a transition. One of the things I think we've really excelled at around the residential program is the number of community outings, home visits, family visits that we have had. And we started with a philosophy of, with safety always in mind, that we keep our young people connected to their families and communities. Well, what that has meant is every single weekend now, we have on Saturday and Sunday, everybody either has a home visit or their family is here. 100% family contact every weekend. In fact, if you visit, Tammy, you've been in our activity room. That activity room is on Saturdays and Sundays is filled with families. And so that has been adapted, because obviously those home visits are opportunities to use skills and try out things you're working on. And sometimes they go well, and sometimes there's challenges. So then we have to come back. What did we learn from that? How do we adapt to that? Safety is a huge issue, because we have young people that have had some pretty high risk behaviors, and they've been in the community as well. So we have to adapt on how we keep everybody safe, but keep them connected, because they're going to be home in a few months. So they have to be out there using their skills. They have to be able to be in the community and be with their families. And so that's a balance that has changed a lot since we've opened.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, when I was volunteering at YRTC, there were some youth that were that had challenges when they were getting ready to go home. They weren't ready for it, you know? And, you know, when they would go, sometimes they'd get in trouble or there'd be some other things that weren't really talked about. Like, what did we learn, you know, from this visit? And, I like how you guys, the like model that you guys are using there, I think it works a little bit better there.
I think you have to recognize like any treatment process or recovery process, that part of that is there's going to be positive outcomes. There's going to be successes and there's going to be some challenges, right? And how we handle that along the way as a teachable moment and learning. And I think, you know, we embrace that as a staff, even though it's hard. You want that first home visit to go perfect, right? You want the youth to come back, the family come back and say, oh my gosh, it was so great. He used his skills. We had no problems, right? Yeah. Sometimes it does. Many times it doesn't. But what we've oriented to and adapted to, and this is how we have to speak with our young people, because we've got some young men who want to get home quick and they see perfection as the path, right? And then I have a rough home visit. Oh, now you're going to tell my judge and I'm going to be stuck here. That's not the approach. Of course, we communicate with the court, but the approach is, what can we learn from this and how do we do better next time? And as long as that challenge wasn't a community safety issue, right? Or a law enforcement contact, we can handle those teachable moments and those skills and trying it again and engage the family. And so once they trust us and that's their mindset, that it's going to be a little bit of a rocky path, but we can do it. Then you start to see success. Our young people get momentum, and then our families have a lot of positivity and hope that this can work for the future. But it's hard. It's hard work.
And like speaking about all the hard work and all the awesome things you guys are doing, there has to be a great team that is there with you. So tell us a little bit about your team. How big is your team? How big is your staff? And I want to hear a little bit from Victoria too about and what she does over there for you guys. So yeah, tell us a little bit about your team and your staff.
We have an amazing team. So right now we are a staff of 40. And probably headed to an organization with about 50 staff. The bulk of those staff are youth coaches. So those are staff that work directly with the youth in the residential program. And we run 3 shifts a day. We have overnight awake staff. So it's a 24/7 operation. The staff that do the work with families are called family coaches. And then we've got education staff and administrative staff. So today we're at about 40. I think we'll probably be 50 staff by summer. And Victoria has a very important role. So I want to give her an opportunity to talk about what she does for Radius.
Sure. So as the director of development and communications for Radius, my responsibility is to maintain sustainability for the organization, which is really critical because government funding does not cover all of the costs for us to serve the youth and families in the innovative way that we do. So there is a gap there, and I'm responsible for fundraising to cover that gap. In addition to that, I also oversee communications, which is a fun part, you know, of my job. I get to help run our social media and, you know, capture some of the fun things and activities that we're doing with our youth on campus and out in the community. So, it's been a privilege to do this work. And my role is just growing every day in the best, nice. Very best way.
Yeah. So you guys, is your office there in the same building where the youth are at? So they get to kind of interact with you guys and see you guys around.
Yes. Our administrative staff, our, you know, boots on the ground staff, we are all around the youth.
That's beautiful. That's awesome. Cause yeah, I mean, if you guys were somewhere else, I feel like it wouldn't make the same impact, you know, where it's like they're there. So they probably get to know you guys' names. Oh, there's Nick, and you know,
absolutely.
Nick brought donuts the other day, and we had a little conversation about my day or something. You know, I think that's That's important. Just a couple more questions for you guys. I'd love to hear, because you guys, it seems like you guys are growing. You guys are, you know, there's more staff coming on, you said. So what are you guys' goals or maybe hopes and wishes for in the next few years? Where do you guys want to go as a team?
Well, that's a great question. Obviously, right now, with 13 youth here, we want to be serving 24 youth. And that is very important within the context here in Douglas County, because there's a huge wait list for young people that need placement, and many of them are in detention, right? And we don't want anybody waiting in detention. And so to be part of that continuum is important to us. So our goals, obviously, we want to get to have 24 youth here. We want to continue to strengthen our education programs and our services. Bigger picture, as we look ahead, we're really focused on developing partnerships in our community with agencies that, again, do complementary work and supportive work. And so some examples are, we're working with some local experts to provide grief groups and grief empathy groups for our young people. Of course, the partnership with Charles Drew is a primary partnership. We're working with U-Turn here in Omaha on violence prevention. Many of our youth and families have had have gang experiences, past or current, and those pieces. As we look ahead down the road in Radius, we have an evaluation, which is actually underway right now. I'm hoping we're grateful to have been chosen to present at the conference this year. And I'm hoping we can have some preliminary evaluation results. So that's important. Also, we'll be seeking national accreditation. We'll be starting a process with COA to become accredited. Takes a couple of years, especially when you're brand new, because you have to be open for a while and have some operational experience. So those pieces are important. And then to continue to grow out the programming, and to do that, to be responsive to our youth and our families. And so some of our core programs, evidence-based practices we use, are restorative practices. We use the target model. We use safe crisis management. So those are kind of the main programmatic pieces. But as we serve more youth and learn from them on what they need, and frankly, what they want developmentally, right? Adolescents, they have a lot of say in what they'd like to have happen here and experience here. And so growing out programs to meet those needs. We have a mindfulness program where we have an expert working with us, Ann Savory, who's built out mindfulness, meditation, yoga experiences. They're voluntary. The youth can participate or not. They can come in and do some quiet thought, all the way up to meditation and yoga. We're building that program out. We're just getting that started. Recreational activities. We have a full acre outdoor recreation space, which is really a blank slate for us for future outdoor activities. And so there's a lot there. We're just getting started.
I mean, you said you guys opened up in July.
Yeah.
Wow, man. You guys have really gotten to high gear there to get some work done. I was, I'm like, so when is Radius Kearney campus opening? Radius Scotts Bluff, Radius worldwide.
Well, you know, we really do believe what we have created here, and bringing pieces together in a unique way, in an innovative way. We do think it is replicable, and whether that's us or others that want to put together a model like this, we know in our system across the state that we need more options. We need more options. And for our youth, that it's a small number relative to the total, but it's an important number that need out-of-home placement and need services that really respond to their trauma experiences, their mental health, substance use treatment needs, skills, education, but the family work. And so what I would say is programs like these, like Radius or a similar program, really need to be embedded in a community and near where the families are. This is not a long distance model, which is why we serve Douglas County youth. So the parents can be here. We can be in their homes. We can work with them. But also, we embed ourselves in the community. So we start to gain a little better understanding of what their experiences are and building out those long-term supports that go far beyond the expertise Radius has. So any community that would be interested in a model like this would have to think about it that way. And I think you need a good healthcare partner as well to make sure people are getting access to high quality physical health care, mental health, all those things. But it could be done in other communities for sure.
Yeah, I like that, because I remember working with a student. He was from Philadelphia, and he was working with me in Kearney, Nebraska. And I'm like, you're going to go back to that same place where you're at, and you don't have the support, you don't have those people around you. And he just did not have a good outlook on life. He was like, what am I doing here in the Midwest? Like, I don't, you know, they would go on field trips around Kearney, and he was like, what is this, corn? It's like, what is this? Yeah. A bunch of cows, you know. And but I like that model where it's like it has to be locally for the kiddos, you know, so they stay around the same people, you know, there. So
I just want to insert that I really feel that Radius is really doing that continuum of care that we're looking for. Mm-hmm. Versus us just going from a very intense treatment center to directly home. I think it's great the way you're really using that wraparound approach, doing all the services wrapping around that youth and the family to help them be successful. And I'll be curious down the road too, as far as to see how many of those kids continue to and remain at home versus reoffending again. So that will be great statistics to see down the road one day.
I'm hoping this time
next year, we have some of those initial outcomes after we've had an opportunity to serve a number of youth and to do some follow-ups with them and their family and where they're at and what their situation is.
Yeah, I was gonna add maybe something in a future where some youth could come back, you know, in a coaching capacity or something there, you know, just to, they could still stay involved, or they could help kiddos that, you know, they've probably been in the same place before, you know, and that kind of helps out. One of my last questions here, and I think you guys have touched on it a little bit, but as a person in the field, you know, I think you said 29 years you've been working in this field, and Victoria and Tammy, hop in if you guys have some thoughts, but what would you say is the key to doing meaningful work in human services and like the juvenile justice system? And that's a big question, but something that, you know, for people that listen to this podcast, you know, they're in the field. What's just something, it could be a little something, just a little tip.
From my experience, I mean, I think it starts with a passion to help people. You're drawn to the work, and there's many ways to help people, right? But if you're drawn to the work and you want to help people, then you're open to learning and listening. And that listening part's really important to young people and families. And I've evolved over my career. You know, early in my career, I didn't really have an understanding of what it meant to listen. Because when you talk to our young people and families about what they need, it often doesn't match up with the thing you think they need. So it can be hard to hear. And if they have a lot of system experience, and some have not had a good experience, and they tell you the truth and say, this, this, and this has not been helpful, and maybe something we did is not helpful, that's hard to hear. But when you listen and take that into account with your approach and developing programs, I think that is one of the keys. And again, I've grown in that over my career. I would not have said that year one. I had no understanding of that year one. But I have a much better understanding now. And I think that's one of the keys.
Victoria, what do you think?
Just having, to echo a little bit off of what Nick was saying, having the opportunity to listen to the youth has been just emotionally overwhelming in the greatest way, because they have dreams and aspirations, and empowering them is literally our mission. And I get to see that every day. And for that, I'm so, I'm so grateful. Yeah.
When you go into this field, of course you want to rescue and you want to help everyone and you just want to see everyone succeed. And I think one thing that I've learned is that you're going to have a lot of successes, but you also have a lot of challenges. And yeah. It's looking at how do you grow from those challenges? Don't beat yourself up that you failed, but it's more about what did I learn from that experience and how can I put those now new skills into the next situation that I face. Also, people have to want to change. You can't change them. And so it's looking Indeed. At how do you approach that differently, not thinking you're going to be that person that's going to go in and make those changes, but how do you be that positive influence? How do you be that positive factor in their life to help them want to change? Because you cannot make them change.
I like that a lot, Tammy. I think my only little key that would go with what you guys are saying, a little added, would be you're trying to do meaningful work. Like you were saying, Nick, that you brought a lot of people, in the Omaha area that they all came together to try to solve this issue, this problem. I think for me, I always think like when there is a problem, there's something that needs some work. It's asking, do we have everybody at the table that needs to be at the table? You know, when you're talking about working with youth, do we have everybody there that could help, you know, like, sure, we think we need these people, but it's like, all right, what about churches or what about bringing in some, you know, other people that could also be part of this bigger group? So, yeah. That would be my
and that's hard to do. That's an everyday challenge in this work.
Last question I had for you guys. I've been doing this for about 2-3 years now. I always do something that I'm grateful for at the end of the day. I usually do 3 things, but you guys can say one thing. Just what are you grateful for today? And Tracy, I know you're there too. You can go ahead and share as well. But Nick, what's something that you're grateful for today?
Well, I'm really grateful for this opportunity to have this conversation. Also the platform that NJJA provides to educate and to communicate. As we know, there's a lot of news and information in the system about our youth and families and the struggles that they're having. And we don't hear a lot of good news. There's not a lot of channels that talk about hope, that talk about what we can do, what we are doing. And so I'm just really grateful for this opportunity and also to be on the board and surrounded with people that are positive, embrace hope, and are problem solvers, right? We continue to do the work. We continue to get better. Especially on a Friday, this is a great way to end the week to have this conversation. So that's what I'm grateful for.
Thank you so much, Nick. Victoria, what are you grateful for today?
I would say today I'm grateful for, I actually keep a little gratitude journal that I do every morning. And that ties right in with our culture. It's something we do is we embed self-care into our culture. We have self-care goals. And like, that is so rare, I think, to find an organization. So I'm so grateful just to be at Radius having this conversation with you all and working for an organization that cares about, you know, the youth, families, and their people.
Awesome. Thank you. Tammy and Tracy. Tammy, what are you grateful for on this cold Friday?
Well, as we've been doing this podcast, one thing that kept going through my mind, and so I'm going to just say it out loud, is that I'm grateful for the opportunities I get to meet so many unique people. Everybody has their own thing and their own niche. And it's been great to be able to do this podcast with some unique individuals.
Tracy, what are you grateful for today?
Oh, yeah. You know, some days I'm just grateful I woke up.
Right.
But no, it's NJJA is a great team of people to work with. And you know, I really enjoy, even though my background is graphic design and communications, hearing about all this wonderful work and being a part of it is fulfilling to me. And I think our next podcast with Radius should include perhaps a young person who has graduated from the program.
Ooh, look into the future, Tracy. Yes. That'd be awesome.
Let's make that happen.
I am grateful to have this conversation with you guys today. I'm also grateful that just hearing about the work you guys are doing over there, it makes me want to get involved and volunteer or help out. Or Nick, let's chat, man. About I love to do art and paint murals awesome. And stuff. So there could be a partnership or something we could do with some youth, man. So
love it.
I'm just grateful I got my gears going in my head. I'm like, you know, I would love to do some of that type of stuff. So, yeah, thank you guys for being here with us today, and hope you guys have a good Friday and a good weekend. So you guys take care.
Thank you, Josh. Great job. Great talking with you.
Thank you, everyone. We appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us on a Friday. Where I'm at, it's sunny out, Josh. It may be cold, but at least it's sunny. So, yeah. So enjoy the rest of your day.